No. Oh,
boy,
dear.
I think she's actually hurt.
No,
there.
I think she is.
Yeah, she's Yuck. Hurt. She took a hard fall off there.
Okay. Boy,
gosh, I hope she's okay.
All right. I got a lot. We got a lot going on. Puckett, who's not here. God, I'm going to call him the ringmaster because there are about 80,000 things I have to do before we even talk about sports. So first of all, this is the Puckett Slick Show brought to you by Redbox. Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play. Okay, check that box. We are coming to you live from the Team Dave Caraway Windermere Real Estate Studios, carawayteam.com. Got that. It is a 90s throwback Thursday. That's right, a 90s throwback Thursday. More on that later. But more importantly, it is an EQC note Thursday, which means that this is the opportunity to win $100 courtesy of the Emerald Queen Casino. If you are tuning in for the very first time right now, it's real simple. Every hour you can enter by texting 49451. Text your name and the city you live in to 49451. And every hour on Thursday, starting at 7 o'clock, going all the way up until 6 at night, we will pick one name randomly out of the names that were submitted that hour. That person has 5 minutes to call us back. If they do, then they are winners of $100. And again, all of it brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. This hour's name is Brian Liu from Tacoma. Brian Liu from Tacoma. Liu spelled L-I-U. Brian, you have 5 minutes to call 206-286-9595 or 1-800-829-0950 for your chance. Not chance. You'd win $100 if you call back in the next 5 minutes. You got 5 minutes to call back to get your $100. If you want to be entered for next hour at 11 o'clock, you have this whole next 55 minutes to text 49451, but why would you wait? Do it now. 49451. The Coors Seltzer text line. Text in with your name, the city you live in, and you will be entered. One text per hour, please. You'll be entered for next hour of the EQC note. All right. Got that one checked off. The Circling Raven leaderboard update. Circling Raven Golf Course in Worley, Idaho. Check out their stay and play package at cdacasino.com. And just moving into the lead, the solo lead, just a moment ago, Matthew Wolf, who is 3-under through 4 holes at the U.S. Open down at Torrey Pines in California, down in San Diego. Matthew Wolf is your solo leader at 3-under. Three golfers right now at 2-under, Patrick Rogers, Francesco Molinari, and Tyrell Hatton. All at 2-under, there is a gaggle of golfers at 1-under in this U.S. Open that got off to a late start because of, well, you hear about the marine layer here. They got one down there in San Diego, too. They're on the water. So you had a fog delay this morning of about an hour and a half. So everything got off to a later start. So they're just kind of getting off now. Most of the, I see Grayson Sigg is through 7. I think that's the farthest that anybody's got. So, yeah, you have, that is your leaderboard update from Circling Raven. check that off. And now finally we have the Venue Kings headlines. The update brought to you by VenueKings.com. If you're looking to buy tickets to any local or national concert or sporting event, buy them now from your trusted source, that is VenueKings.com, VenueKings.com. Mariners last night dropped the third and final game of the Twin Series 7-2. Nelson Cruz, by the way, nice homecoming for him. He hit .417, 5-for-12 in the series. He had 3 RBIs and a home run last night as well. Mitch Haniger, in his return from his bone bruise, went one for four last night, a couple of strikeouts, but he is back in the lineup. The Mariners will be back at it again tonight. The Rays coming to town over at T-Mobile. Justin Dunn versus Rich Hill will be the pitching matchup. I just got the thumbs up. Curtis, we have a callback. Brian Liu in Tacoma called back. He won his $100. Very happy, I'm sure. And so again, 49451, the number to text in with your name and where you live, and then you can be entered to win next hour. It's that easy to get $100. Super easy. Other news, Seahawks mandatory minicamp wrapping up today. Pete Carroll's going to talk at 1 o'clock, give an update on everything that's gone on these last 3 days over at the VMAC. A couple exciting games last night in the NBA playoffs. The Hawks, it took a 3-2 lead. That wasn't the story. The story was they were down 26 points in the third quarter to the 76ers, and Philadelphia melted down. Nate McMillan pantsed Doc Rivers down the stretch. And then without Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers, I don't even know how, but they beat the Jazz to take a 3-2 lead in that series. By the way, in the NHL, Islanders at Lightning tonight, right here on Sports Radio 950 KJR at 5 o'clock. All right. So that took about 8 minutes to do everything. That's just the business of the radio show as we have it today here on Thursday. That's quite a lot before we can even begin to talk about the fact that Puckett isn't here. He is on his trip. He's going to be gone for a couple weeks. He's about... right about now, he should be an hour away from his... it's not the most harrowing part of his trip, but it's the part that's giving him fits because it's the same mountain pass that last year when he ventured east. He had the breakdown from hell that took him like 5-6 days to figure out. So he's got demons. He's got demons in this particular stretch. So I don't know if you're a praying person or if you like to send positive thoughts or whatever it is, please, to Puckett, his wife and kids... To their van, the Goldie the super van, all of it. They need all of our thoughts right now, our warm, positive thoughts, because we don't want him to break down again, and that because that would be disastrous, especially this heat wave that's happening across the country right now. He's got his whole family in tow. That would not be fun for him. Okay, but while he is gone, and we're gonna celebrate like hell that he is, because as you know. Jason Puckett considers the 80s to be the best decade in terms of entertainment, music, movies, all that. And while there are some, you know, especially I'll give it to him on some movies and some particular music. But, and Curtis, we could crank this up here, the Cranberries. He likes to give you the 80s throwback Thursday, but I'm not doing that. See, when he's not here, I don't have to do that. I don't have to go by your rules, Puckett. There are no rules right now. You're gone. 90s Throwback Thursday this week and next week here on Puck and Slick with Puckett gone, because I can do it. When the puck is away, the slick will play, and that's what we got going on. So it's a 90s Throwback Thursday. If you like 90s music, hell, you could even text in some 90s music that you want to hear, and we'll see what we could do for you. But all day long, all show long, it's going to be the 90s, because we're not doing that 80s throwback today. No, sir. Seahawks mandatory minicamp going on, wraps up today. As I go to my right in the Red Box producers booth, Curtis Crabtree, our Seahawks reporter. Curtis, I first of all, hello, welcome to the show. Thanks. Hi, for Matt. Being here. after that litany of business that we had to take care of at the top. You know, it's funny, I don't, and you cover this team all the time, so I think you can weigh in here. I don't know if it's because we're closest to this team because we cover it, or it's just this way with every team. I don't think it is. The Seahawks find ways to have more storylines consistently, I think, than maybe any other team in the NFL. I mean, we talk about week to week, year to year, off season to off season. I don't think anybody has as many storylines as this team continues to constantly have. There's always like 8 or 9 things going on. And we're talking about a mini camp, and look at everything coming out. New offensive coordinator, former first round pick, running back in a contract year, not healthy again. contract holdout from Jamal Adams. Dwayne Brown wants a new contract. And then there's the whole, like, Russell Wilson thing hanging over the whole deal. There is a lot going on for a three-day mini camp. Curtis, you and the other... I mean, it's never boring, is it?
It very rarely has, in Pete Carroll's tenure, has the team been boring to be around. There's usually... This is what relevance is. The Mariners have not been very relevant.
No, that's true.
But this is what relevance is, to have these... Like, everybody might pull their hair out over all the national talking heads and the Russell Wilson thing continuing to fester, but you know what? They wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't matter and if your team wasn't relevant.
Right.
It would not be a topic. Think of, like... Some of the terrible quarterback situations teams across the league have gone through.
Nobody's talking about
ages.
Denver's quarterback situation, that's bad every year.
Yeah, there's no ongoing discussion of, are the Broncos replacing Drew Locke? Yeah, heck, even like the future of Derek Carr,
right,
with the rate, like, that's barely anything of significance, and he's a much better player than anybody in Denver showing
me.
This is the price of relevance. Is to be somebody who gets talked about, and that doesn't always just mean, you know, having smoke blown up your backside. It means the opposite occasionally too. So this is what relevance is.
Well, you say the price of relevance, like it's a bad. I think it's a great thing. Look, I mean, it gives us stuff to talk about, whether it's on the radio show or at the bar, or in the, you know, around the kitchen table, around the water cooler, whatever it is. I mean, this team is massively interesting no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's been that way since Pete Carroll showed up.
I'm mainly saying that in reference to the people who hated the fact that the Russell Wilson thing was a thing all spring long and all that.
Well, guess what? Unless the team wins the Super Bowl this year or goes to the Super Bowl, whatever you went through this offseason, I think you're going to have next offseason and magnified to a whole different level when it comes to Russell Wilson. That's just an opinion. But I don't think that all that is going anywhere unless the team wins. And maybe I'm crazy. And I guess I have this feeling at some point every year, every offseason. But last night I was reading stories and I was kind of thinking about things. I was thinking about the roster. You know, I was reading comments from Tyler Lockett about Shane Waldron and the offense that they're bringing in and those kind of things. And I was just, I'm starting to get the itch. I'm starting to get the fever. I'm starting to feel this team a little bit right now. And probably because, in large part, I haven't seen Seahawks football in 5 months. But it's starting to feel like a team, Curtis, that could round the corner, could be competitive, they're always competitive, but I'm saying could be one of the teams really in the mix for a Super Bowl. And I felt, look, last year I didn't feel like personnel was the issue. I thought they had a talented enough roster that they can make a Super Bowl run. There were a lot of other things that happened and went wrong throughout the season, and we kind of know what they were. But I thought that going into the offseason, there's no way. I mean, I thought they were going to take a huge step back this offseason. Between the salary cap dwindling and some of the money on the books, aging money, I just didn't think that there was any way that they would be able to cobble together an offseason that would have me feeling like this could be a Super Bowl contender again. But personnel-wise, once again, I think they have a Super Bowl caliber roster. We'll see what happens with the rest of it. There's a lot of things that need to fall into place, but that's probably, I mean, that's the first one. You got to have the guys to do it. I'm stunned that John Schneider and Pete Carroll were able to pull off as successful of an offseason as they did.
I think I go into this season with the Seahawks thinking this is probably the widest range of outcomes that they've had. I think one of their teams has had in a while. Mm. I think they could win 12, 13 games. I think they could win 7 games. Like, I think that the window of possible finishes for them is probably the widest it's been in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think there's all that many things that would have to go wrong with the quality of the division in total for it to get away from them.
Yeah.
But I also think that if, on the other hand, things tick in the right direction, if things click with Shane Waldron's offense, if they stay healthy enough and all of those sorts of things, that there's the potential for them to be pretty competitive, pretty good. So that's kind of my, at this point in mid-June, having barely seen this team.
Sure.
Like
we're just going off of what we know.
they're not even doing 11 on 11 right now.
Right.
Like, that's there's no real football going on in these practices.
It's mini camp.
Well, usually you have 11 on 11 in mini camps, at the very least. So this is still a very different landscape from what things are looking like. And we won't know what this team is on the football field until well into probably August before we get a sense for the talent that they have and if they're looks to be any areas where they might be lacking a touch and all of that.
And there are. I mean, you know, you certainly would like to have a more solidified cornerback situation. I think you'd like to feel better maybe about the linebacker group. I don't know. You know, I certainly would be encouraged if KJ Wright were still a part of this team. You know, last night I'm at a bar and one of the TVs was showing the Cowboys game from last year. And it's so easy to forget just how instinctual, how reactive KJ Wright is, you know, game in, game out, and how many plays he diagnoses and just blows up just because of his veteran savvy. And so, you know, if they don't bring him back, and I think they probably won't, which, you know, business-wise, I think is probably right. That's why you drafted Jordan Brooks, so he could take over. And you've got to get younger and cheaper. But there's going to be something missing there without KJ Wright.
Yeah, he's been a stalwart piece of that defense for a decade, and he had one of his better seasons in the second half of that stretch last year.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I'd tend to lean towards him not being back, with the caveat of, you know, break in case of emergency until he signed elsewhere. Like, right. They could always pull that trigger if they need it. Depending on how things look in training, I think they want to go into training camp, see how the Daryl Taylor thing looks at Sam linebacker and some of the things they're doing there. They obviously know that between Brooks and Bobby Wagner, they've got the two off ball linebacker spots set up fine. Mm-hmm. It's just how they're going to adapt to everything else. And right. Coming off, I know it's late in the off season and everything like that, but KJ's not taking a nickel off of what he did last year. Mm-hmm. It's not, and he shouldn't.
Sure.
So it's what,
it know, is wild it, that there's no, that there's not a market for him.
Well, I think it's the positional value chart thing. Like a non-middle linebacker, non-pass-rushing linebacker. It's the same reason he had struggled to get to Pro Bowls. Mm-hmm. That position is just not as coveted from an asset standpoint.
Right. You've got to have sack numbers. You've got to lead the league in tackles. Something.
Yeah, and so just to make a random corollary, because of being at the Twins games the last several days and all that, KJ Wright and the Seahawks might be like Nelson Cruz and the Mariners. To where, like, player's still good.
Yeah.
Team is heading a different direction, and the marriage just doesn't fit anymore.
Which is too bad. I mean, in both cases. I mean, you saw what Nelson Cruz did over the week.
Yeah, Nelson is obviously still a great player, but it didn't make sense for him at whatever he was after his last contract was done to sit through a rebuild process either. So I don't think there's necessarily any hard feelings. It just it didn't make sense for either side anymore.
Well, there's a lot, and over the next couple of days, today, Thursday and Friday, as we wrap up, and again, Pete Carroll's going to talk at 1:00. I'm sure they'll have some of that that audio on Ian's show. We'll go through some of the things coming out of mandatory minicamp, some of the storylines, and just kind of looking ahead at, because this is the last time I think that they're going to get their eyeballs on these guys until training camp, right?
Correct.
Yeah, this is it. So it's going to be a little over a month until we hear really anything from the Seahawks. So we'll have a chance to get into all that here in the next today and tomorrow. We got a lot going on today, though, because, look, this whole controversy in Major League Baseball, everything going on with the spider tech, look, we have ourselves right here a former Major League Baseball player, and that's Bucky Jacobson. And so, you know, he's having a kid here pretty soon. We think we might not be able to have him on next Monday to schedule time. So he's going to come on today. We'll bring him on at 12:30 because I want to get into all of that, get his opinion, because everybody everybody seems to be weighing in, whether it's pitchers, hitters, agents. Everybody seems to have an opinion on that. So we'll talk to him at 12:30. 11 o'clock, Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network. Everything going on around the league, including vaccinations, what kind of impact the vaccination or not getting the vaccination is going to have on these players and on the media. So we'll jump into all that, plus get updates on the contract situations of Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown. But coming up next, we're going to head down to Torrey Pines. It's the U.S. Open. It was here, 6 years ago? We hope it'll come back. In the meanwhile, I think this is the first time it's been on the West Coast since then. But down at Torrey Pines, we're going to have Brian Wacker join us and give an update now that the fog is lifted and we're underway down there at Torrey Pines. So that's going to come up next here on Puck and Slick. Sports Radio 950, KJR. Awesome. All right. Puck and Slick here, Sports Radio 950 KJR. We're coming to you from the Windermere Real Estate Studios, Caraway, Dave Caraway Team.com, CarawayTeam.com. Right now on the Beacon Plumbing Hotline, look, we've got ourselves a major championship going on down at Torrey Pines in San Diego. And one of my favorite guys to talk to when we talk golf, even though he's from the East Coast, we won't hold that against him. Brian Wacker joins us right now from Golf Digest. And Brian, I know you've got a lot of pull. Did you call in that fog this morning just so you could adjust to the time and get your sleep in a little bit?
It worked out quite well for those of us on the East Coast. A nice fog delay this morning. So the marine layer, as they like often to refer to it, although I think this was really just fog, which was happy to see burn off after about 90 minutes.
Exactly. Now, hey, we're no stranger to the marine layer up here. We got a couple potential home runs knocked down by it last night, I think, here, the Mariners game. That's why they lost 7-2. But San Diego, man, the weather's looking good now, and everything looks as it should. The course, I'm sure, is firming up and getting faster as we speak. So I guess we start with where we ended the last major tournament, and that's Phil Mickelson. And look, everybody always asks, is this the year? Is this the year? And I stopped asking that question about 10 years ago. I didn't think Phil would win a major ever again, but lo and behold, at the PGA, he proved me wrong. So it's not looking like the best start for him today. It's early, though. What do you think about Phil Mickelson and this championship?
Well, no, not the best start for Phil, unless you consider his two wood from 330 yards out on the 13th hole just a few minutes ago, landing in a bush, having to take a drop, and then Phil doinking his pitch shot off the flagstick and back into the rough. So a rough start for Phil. He was already one over on the day, now playing the 13th hole, his fourth hole of the day. So, yeah, look, I think certainly there was a lot of buzz and excitement coming off his improbable PGA championship victory last month. At a place that really nobody would have expected him to really win or maybe even be in contention. And, of course, he comes to a place with Torrey Pines. He lives close by. He's had success in the past there. You would expect him, or at least maybe the hope is that he would do well. But, look, I think we have to remember that Phil just turned 51 years old yesterday. I think the PGA Championship, as magnificent as that performance was, it was the exception, not the norm. And we're seeing him, this is the beauty of Phil, though, right? I mean, you never know what you're going to get with Phil. And it's certainly been interesting so far. He's had a putter, he horseshoed out of the hole earlier, and now he's got a bogey putt coming up again to drop the two over. So it's been a struggle for Phil.
Well, you always know exactly what to get. You're going to get from Phil. You're going to get cool looking sunglasses. You're going to get calves, and you're going to get lots of thumbs up. So that's, you're always going to get that from Phil.
You're going to get entertained. Are you not entertained? I mean, you're going to get entertained. So even though Phil is two over through his first four holes, long way to go. Maybe he can turn this around, but doesn't seem to be his sharpest at the moment. But it will never be boring with Phil. That much is guaranteed.
Matthew Wolf just dropped one to fall back to two under, but he was three under through four. And it's been kind of an up and down year for Matthew Wolf, so maybe not the name you would expect to see at the top of the leaderboard, albeit early. But what have you seen from him so far today?
Yeah, no, not at all. This is a guy who's making his first start in 2 months. I was actually at the last tournament he played in New Orleans with a team event with Colin Morikawa, who provided some excellent, really, insight to the struggles that Matthew seems to be going through off the course. You know, he said, look, obviously he's struggling and going through some stuff, whether it's on the course or off it. You know, and you could see it bleeding into his game and his persona on the course. He just wasn't very happy. He was very grumpy, very just not in a good place mentally. And I think he, you know, taking some time off maybe helped with that. Seems to be in a little place, a better place now, or at least trying to get there. And remember, this is a guy who led the U.S. Open through 54 holes last fall. So this was a guy who was in contention, you know, at a U.S. Open before, and had a chance to win the U.S. Open, and is already a winner on tour. This is a guy who's clearly talented, but mentally just wasn't really having any fun out there. For whatever the reason, whether it's his struggles with his golf, whether it's just the adjustment of going from college golf in a team atmosphere and hanging out with your friends to the professional world, which is, you know, in golf, you know, we see these guys on TV and it looks very glamorous, and it is. But at the same time, there's a lot of downtime. It's a very individualistic, can be lonely world out there on tour, hotel rooms, golf courses. You know, there's a lot of adjustment that needs to happen. I can remember Hunter Mahan telling me years ago that, you know, the biggest adjustment was golf is a job. It becomes a job, and it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of leaning on yourself and a lot of alone time. So, you know, for some people, that's harder to adjust to than others.
Last couple of minutes here with Brian Wacker from Golf Digest talking about the U.S. Open down at Torrey Pines. The USGA, Brian, didn't give the people what they want in terms of Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau being matched up in the same pairing for the first couple of days. Maybe we'll get it over the weekend. We'll see how things shake out. But just the fact that they have, I mean, there's no love lost, obviously, between those two. Just that public rivalry that there is, you don't see a lot in golf, but that's how it is here in 2021 between these two. Do you think it is a detriment to the sport of golf, or do you think it helps and get more eyeballs on it?
No, I don't think it's a detriment, and I do think it brings more eyeballs. Look, as Brooks pointed out, that, you know, this is a topic sort of on a lot of mainstream sports networks and shows and websites and so forth that really wouldn't have been maybe necessarily talking about golf. You know, is it good for the sport, or are people going to all of a sudden tune into golf because of it? I'm not so sure about that. It's a little bit of sort of like the car wreck scenario on the side of the road. You know, people, you know, you see the car wreck and everyone sort of rubbernecks and then moves on. And I think that's what we've got here. That said, look, it certainly makes for interesting copy for us writers and people covering the sport. And I think it does, you know, shed some light and some honesty on the fact that, look, not all of these guys are going to get along. Not all of them are going to be friends, which is a sort of message that has always kind of been sort of pushed and repeated, that, you know, everyone sort of gets along in a gentlemanly game. And look, it is for the most part, but there are clearly guys who don't like one another, and that's okay. It makes it more fun and interesting when there is a villain involved. And in this case, you probably have two villains, because you've got guys who don't like Brooks for one reason or another, who's not a golf nerd per se, and you've got people who don't like Bryson for the opposite reason, because he is a golf nerd. And, mm-hmm. and all the things that go along with that. So I think it's fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, I have a blast with it too. I think it's fascinating. This whole championship is going to be fascinating. We can't wait to watch. Brian Wacker, thanks very much, from Golf Digest, at Brian Wacker 1 on Twitter. Appreciate you being part of the show today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks as always, Brian. All right, quick break. Look, we've got a sport that is scrambling, looking for ways to not die out. I'm not talking about golf either. But has its savior been staring them in the face all along? I'll explain next. Podcasts. I thought I saw a man, but too loud. I forgot about Natalie Imbruglia. 90s Throwback Thursday here on Puck and Slick. Puckett is on his big vacation, touring half the United States, seemingly. He's taking the long route to Colorado, to Aspen. So he's going to be out for the next couple weeks, so I'm running things. 80s Throwback Thursday is out. 90s Throwback Thursday, that's what we're celebrating here at Sports Radio 950 KJR. And the Puck and Slick Show brought to you by Redbox. Look, I came across a tweet last night, and it was a couple days old. It wasn't a big deal just on its surface, but I chose to look at the bigger picture. And the tweet was a video of Fernando Tatis Jr., you know, all everything baseball player, shortstop down with the San Diego Padres, who's just lighting everything, lighting the entire baseball world on fire right now. And it was just him. He was about to get on the team bus. I don't know if they're going to the stadium or going to a hotel or whatever it was. And there's the barricade. And as he let a couple kids through just to sign some things that they had, and a couple more and a couple more. And, you know, pretty soon there were a bunch of kids around him. He just stops and he signs all their autographs. And I just thought to myself, yes, this is what baseball needs. You know, the baseball is falling all over itself, Rob Manfred, to make all these changes to get and attract and keep young eyes on its sport. And all this with mound visit limits and, you know, to clocks between innings and talking about clocks between pitches and doing all these different things to try and speed up games, to make it so, you know, this society that we have, that we have less and less and less of an attention span, the younger and younger that people get right now, get and keep their eyes on the sport. And I think that, I mean, there may be some merit to some of that. I think a lot of it's kind of ruining the sport. But what I think baseball needs more than that is exactly what they're getting right now in Fernando Tatis Jr. I think he can be the person. If there's going to be a person, he could be the person to save baseball. And you don't have to do all these changes. Because what do we know about baseball? What do we know about sports? Sports, when you're talking about getting the youth, you've got to be cool. And I was talking, I have a podcast called Positive Spin, right, where we talk about baseball. And I was talking to Shakia Taylor, who's a writer. She's written for a bunch of publications, including Baseball Prospectus. And you've got to make the sport cool to younger kids and accessible to young kids, inner city kids. Capture that youth. And if you do that, that is how you pay it off later in dividends in the next 10 to 20 years. And just looking at black participation in baseball right now, and because, again, look, this is what the NBA has done. Now, it's probably easier for the NBA because when you talk about the urban youth, well, a lot of the, most of the NBA players, they look like them. And so it's easily represented. But black participation, which when it was at its highest point, which was in 1981, it was 18.7% of baseball was black participation. Now it's down around 7%. And, you know, you look at the Mariners, and there's so many black players for the Mariners, and it's great. They're the blackest team in baseball. And so, you know, around here, kids can see that and see baseball players, professional athletes that look like them making the sport cool. But what they really need in baseball is somebody like a Fernando Tatis, who is, look, he's Afro-Latino. He comes and he has all the swag. And this is what Ken Griffey Jr. did in the 90s for baseball. We saw it here. We were very close to it. So we may not have even have been thinking about the bigger picture. But making this sport cool to the inner city, to the inner youth, to and accessible to those kids, that is what's going to save baseball. Fernando Tatis, I think, is exactly, he's bombastic enough. I think he wants to be on that mantle. He's making it fun and cool every day, whether you like bat flipping and all that or not. It's exciting. Every time he steps into the batter's box, it's exciting. Kids love him, and I think that he needs to continue to be the face of baseball, and he can guide this sport into the next 20 years of youth participation. I really think that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, NFL, Mike Garafolo from the NFL Network, he will join us, as he always does, on every Thursday morning, 11 o'clock, here on Sports Radio 950 KJ.